Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to welcome you to this first conference of the European Project Evidence-Informed Policy and Practice, AP, jointly organized, as said, by the Ministries of Education of the Flemish Community and of the Netherlands. This conference, I must say, is yet another example of the collaboration between our two countries in the ongoing quest to improve our education by the use of insights gathered from scientific research. I would like to take this opportunity to thank the Epicenter, which is the driving force behind this project, to invite me and also to organize this conference. And to thank also our Dutch colleagues for yet again a very productive collaboration in the field of evidence-informed policy in education. My colleague Hans van der Vlist cannot attend today, but when I was reflecting on the reasons why he couldn't attend, I was wondering whether in the future we can also exchange some competences, some experiences in how to tackle governmental crises. Evidence-informed policy and practice are obviously the core of this conference. Therefore, I will take the opportunity to reflect on the role of research and evidence in education. I will outline some regional, national, and international initiatives that we as policymakers develop in order to make a sound use of educational research in developing policy plans and measure. I will also draw on some examples where we try to transfer research, evidence, and knowledge towards educational practice, an area where perhaps, and the second P in the IP is an example of it, demands even more efforts to really cover and bridging the gap. The need for more evidence in policy making dates long back. It's not very clear, I think. Can you see the slides? No. So I skip them? Or is there something to do? I better skip them. So, but on this slide, there is a citation from Florence Nightingale to prove that the need for more evidence in policymaking dates long back. We can say that the 70s of last century witnessed a boost of policy or practice-oriented research as a reaction to fundamental research and its own confinement within the academic ivory tower. In those 70s of last century, researchers joined forces with policymakers to carry out action research in which the feasibility of policy measures were tested in a real environment. So we readily forget it, but the 70s were really a decade, in which there was really a boost of the first steps in what we now know as policy and as evidence-based policy making. Since the 90s, however, governments have invested more systematically in policy-oriented research. Nevertheless, the exchange between research on the one hand and policy and practice on the other was not successful in all domains, which means there is still a need for a better use of evidence in policymaking, for knowledge sharing, and also knowledge transfer to practice. The term evidence-based policy is very fashionable nowadays. It is used in several domains, including education, to stress the importance of evidence in policymaking. But this term also conveys a particular research methodology and an approach that focuses on the effectiveness of practice and policies. Although the modern form of meta-analysis was actually launched in the field of education by Jean Glass and colleagues, the approach was mainly developed within the domain of medicine. It is best known under the name of evidence-based medicine. This is an approach in medicine where evidence from scientific research is crucial in clinical decision-making. It focuses on data collected through scientific and laboratory-based experiments like randomized control trials, double-blind designs, and placebo-controlled clinical trials, in order to be able to use this evidence in daily clinical settings, routine access to the results of the researchers are necessary. This drove the need for systematic reviews. The best-known organization who conducts systematic reviews and provides access to medical evidence is the Cochrane Collaboration. It is a group of over 28,000 specialists in healthcare. This group systematically reviews randomized trials of the effects of prevention, treatments, and rehabilitation, as well as health systems interventions. Cochrane reviews are published in the Cochrane database of systematic review sections of the Cochrane Library. Adrian Smith coined the term evidence-based policies in 1996. It was in his presidential address to the Royal Statistical Society by questioning the process of policymaking and urging for a more evidence-based approach since it has valuable lessons to offer. In 1999, under societal pressure for more evidence-based policymaking, the Campbell Collaboration was established. This conducts reviews on the best evidence on the effects of social and educational policies and practices. Also, in 1999, the Economic and Social Research Council became involved in and established a 1.6 million euro grant to the Evidence Network, a center for evidence-based policy and practice. And of course, the EPICENTER, the Evidence for Policy and Practice Information and Coordination Center. It is at the forefront of carrying out systematic reviews and developing review methods in social science and public policy. They are dedicated to making reliable research findings accessible to people who need them, whether for policy, for practice, or even for personal decisions. What is more, the EPICENTER argues that there is also a need to be systematic in answering questions tackled by other research methods than randomized controlled trial. And I will come back to that later in my speech. It aims to offer a systematic methodology about synthesizing research on, for example, prevalence or theories about cause. These, of course, are a lot of academic initiatives. But besides academic initiatives, evidence-based policy and research as a tool for policymaking and policy evaluation was also recognized by policymakers themselves. Governments have, of course, long been the main funders of research. But since the 19th of last century, a clear trend can be detected in the orientation of funding towards policy-relevant research. The OECD publication of 2011, Public Research Institutions, Mapping Sector Trends, states that the basic rationale for public research institutions varies, but it's most often related to supporting the growth and productivity of industry, conducting research of benefit to society, and conducting policy-relevant research. In Flanders, for instance, since the 90s, several funding schemes exist that aim specifically at stimulating policy-relevant research. In 2001, the Flemish government as a whole, launched a program for policy-oriented research basis. Its aim is to scientifically support the policy of the Flemish government in all the different policy domains, and in order to respond swiftly and proactively to new trends and developments in society. Every 5 years, new research bases are selected through an open call, and the response to the call is mostly from consortia of different Flemish universities. The counter-fragmentation inherent to traditional project-based funding The program for policy-oriented research basis is built around a thematic approach and uses structural funding. In education, we have a specific research base for education policy, and it has been established and continued since 2001. The theme of this research base is schooled careers and the transitions to the labor market. In January 2012, the program has started a third term of 5 years. So there is already an ongoing process of 10 years, and a third period of 5 years is starting to really establish sound data to inform educational policy about pupils' and students' careers and how the transitions to the labor market effectuates. The Flemish Government's Agency for Innovation Through Science and Technology, called IWT, has launched the program for strategic research through which research with clear added value for society and policy can be funded. So that's another line of funding that is used to really inform policymakers with new data from research. And then we have a fund for scientific research. It's called the FWO. It funds fundamental research already since 1928, and although not aimed at applied research, some research is very relevant for strategic planning and policy support in several domains such as education, which means that we must also look to fundamental research, because also in fundamental research, some really important findings for policy and practice can be found. And then, last but not least, I can say that in our own Department of Education and Training, we have a long-standing tradition in funding policy-relevant research. Since 1994, our funding program called Educational Policy-Driven and Practice-Oriented Scientific Research is established. It was established by a decree in 1994. And we have been financing policy-oriented educational research and scientific policy evaluation since that time. Every year, we identify several policy-relevant themes with a clear strategic purpose on either the short or the long term. This research program is strongly aligned with our department's strategic planning so as to produce, develop, and disseminate policy-relevant research in alignment with the policy cycle. In addition to delivering their research results, researchers must show how their findings can feed in policy measures and/or in schools or teachers' practice. Besides this program, we also commission a lot of research on a more ad hoc basis, aimed at the evaluation of current policy measures. And we also take a lot of initiatives on the international plane as well. Our department coordinates the Flemish participation in international comparative research, and we participate in a lot of that kind of research. First of all, a lot of OECD programs. We participate in the program for international student assessment called PISA, and we do that already since 2003. Another OECD program recently launched the International Achievement of Adult Competences, known as PIAC. The Teaching and Learning International Survey, TELUS from the OECD, is another study in which we actively participate. Then we also participate in a number of researchers from the IEA. We participate through the KU Leuven in International Mathematics and Science Study, the TIMSS, but also in Progress in International Reading Literacy Study, PIRLS. Another example from the IEA is the participation in the International Civic and Citizen Education Study. And within the EC, within the European Commission, we participate in the first European survey on language competences, which will be going public this summer. Furthermore, and more related as well to policy as to practice, we have our own Flemish student achievement polls. These performance tests assess the overall achievement level of Flemish pupils through a grand-scale standardized test on a significant sample population. Since 2002, we have carried out 12 such achievement polls on subjects ranging from literacy to language competences in Dutch and French, competences in biology and geography, and research skills. Additionally, we have made these standardized tests available to all schools, free of charge. This allows schools to benchmark their pupils' performance vis-a-vis other and similar schools, as well as vis-a-vis the regional average. These so-called parallel tests are available to all schools, but there is the team, the academic research team, that conducts the polls that helps them to interpret the results and thus provides the individual schools with a scientific interpretation of their achievements. This is only one example of how governments can be powerful mediators between research and practice and still derive insights for their own core businesses, namely policy making and policy evaluation. Furthermore, we commissioned the Flemish Educational Council, in which the different educational actors are present, to annually fund 2 to 3 thematic practice-oriented reviews conducted by universities and aimed at teacher competence development, school and class management, pedagogical guidance, and educational innovation. Each review gives a synthesis of the scientific knowledge that is available on a particular educational team and provides easily accessible summary of the main findings. One of the main challenges of all these funding programs is to maintain and even boost the policy relevance of the research it funds. An important challenge, however, is how to align the needs of academic research and policy, because we know that they are not the same. First, there is this aspect of time frame. While many policy issues demand instant solutions and immediate action, research needs time to design, to collect and analyze data. A possible solution to overcome this crucial divide is to invest in long-term strategic policy preparation. We need research to explore and identify coming questions and future trends and problems so that, together with formulating strategic policy issues, we can invest in research to better coin the actual policy responses. Another aspect concerns the distinct output of academic research and policymakers. Even within our own program, we feel that less and less researchers are interested in participating because of the output they can generate through it. Nowadays, academic funding and mandates are acquired only through building a public record in scientific journals with innovative and fundamental research. To overcome this, we need to reflect on valorizing innovative, policy-relevant and applied research activities and take it into account when calculating researchers' output and the funding of higher education institutions and also research institutions. It's a real problem we have to tackle in Flanders because the funding of our higher education institutions is solely based on those more fundamental research performances of researchers. And if we really want to boost evidence-based policymaking, we have to invest more in real evidence-based research in more evidence procuring research from universities and research institutes. Another problem is making information available and accessible to researchers, practitioners, and the general public. And I also mentioned the general public. That's also an important actor in really using data from research. So making information available and accessible to all, I can say, is an important and valuable trend in policy nowadays. The Flemish government has created a legal context for access to information and data in the 2004 decree. In our department, this has resulted in a policy on freedom and maximizing accessibility of educational data in 2011. Our ministry collects a lot of data. For instance, data on students via their enrollment, on teachers through their payroll. We have also school achievement scores through our national polls. Demographic, economic, and other data is collected by other organizations, but is, of course, also of interest for educational policy. We have the evidence and knowledge gathered from national and international research, not to mention the amount of informal knowledge that is constructed through networks and between individuals. Given the trend of free access to information and the enormous amount of data and information that is available, the need for an efficient knowledge management has steadily increased. That is why we are investing in the creation of a knowledge center. This center aims to construct and deliver the collective intelligence of the educational field through knowledge sharing between different organizations such as government, departments, but also schools, higher education institutions, and why not also public employment services. Our aim is to produce a substantial added value since we assume that collective intelligence is larger than the sum of individual knowledge. Expectations are high, needless to say, and that is why I'm particularly pleased with the workshop on Knowledge Center that is organized at this conference. And I look forward, and I'm very keen on learning from our partners. As you can conclude from the examples I cited, we are dedicated to constructing a policy-making environment where research and knowledge sharing are key driving forces. Only recently, as the OECD's Educational Policy Commission undertaking yet another initiative towards the promoting of research and evidence for the design, implementation, and evaluation of educational policy. Last April, the Commission gathered to think about the role of educational research in evidence-based policy making. Several questions were addressed to the Commission and the participants. For example, how do countries evaluate the quantity and quality of education? Which policies exist and are they effective? Are there very promising areas of research and on education and learning? How do countries strengthen the evidence base? This shows that core issues in the development of an evidence-based educational policy are still prevalent today, and that we have much to gain from joining forces on international fora, such as this conference here today. Ladies and gentlemen, however, this very positive and ongoing process of gathering evidence-based information for policymaking, some issues remain standing in the light of evidence-based policy and especially in the field of education. I will try to briefly address the most important ones here. They have to do with reductionism, with generalizability, with effectiveness, and even with democracy. It can hardly be contested that water boils at 100 degrees Celsius in similar contexts. But water is a collection of identical molecules, and it's fairly easy to standardize the context in which water is heated. A classroom, on the other hand, is not so uniform and standardized. No child, teacher, school, or time is identical. Output and outcomes are definable but not only measurable and easy to evaluate. It's near impossible to shape identical experimental and control populations, and moreover, to control for all contextual variables in educational settings. The term evidence-based policy further implies a rigid evaluation of effects and outcomes. However, within an educational settings, effects cannot be measured immediately after an intervention. Many educational interventions take time to take effect. What is more, research on educational effectiveness shows that effects in education cannot be grasped as purely the outcome of mechanical processes. It is especially the interplay and coincidence of practices, policies and interventions with contextual factors such as cultural vision, social customs, values and expectations that drive true educational innovation. These observations can also be made in joint international comparative research. Where it is attempted to control for cultural variables, since they impede a strong comparison. But these national differences in culture, social conduct, and indeed history, and I may say values, may well be at the heart of why some countries attain good results with completely opposite policies. In an endeavor to control for all those variables, so as to be able to reproduce laboratory settings and to isolate dependent and independent variables, the complexity and interplay of all elements might be overlooked. We must beware not to oversimplify our research questions and policy solutions in order to fit a randomized controlled trial. Another long-standing issue concerns generalizability of findings. The problem of extrapolation to different populations or longer time frames still remains today. We know, for instance, that several subpopulations are routinely underrepresented in designs where a normal population is a necessary condition. Research findings cannot be applied in a mechanistic way. Each application of research needs reflections, needs discussions of what we want to achieve, of what our vision of education means. And let's not forget also that the publication bias in scientific publishing really exists. All researchers here will probably know how difficult or even impossible it is to publish negative research findings. And still, effectiveness can be gained in avoiding bad practices more than in applying trendy new approaches. Of course, we need the peer review publication process in order to guarantee quality of research publications, but we need to be aware that published evidence only tells half a story. The question of effectiveness is very pervasive today in educational research and policy. With the crisis, the urge to be effective and efficient became even more important. What is effective policy? What is the effect of a particular educational innovation? What is the net effect of new policy? These questions, all too legitimate in every way, are hardly up for a clear and universal answer. The notion of causality, the concept of effects in education, is problematic to say the least. And making everybody understand the difference between correlation and causality might be just one of the most fruitful outcomes of general education. Reductionism, generalizability, and effectiveness all pose serious constraints on the concept of evidence-based educational policy. But even if we are able to fit educational reality into a randomized controlled trial, what I really doubt of, there would still be a major impediment. And that's because education is also a societal choice. Therefore, all educational policy is and should be made within the political arena. Debate and dialogue constitute crucial elements in forming a positive educational policy. Not only evidence, but a clear vision of what education is and should do for this and next generations, on how we need to prepare our children for the future, is central for all policy making. And this vision should be constructed for and by society. Inspiring dialogue, organizing debate, and facilitating interactions are therefore complementary but crucial factors in our efforts. Especially in our quest for effectiveness, the public debate and social dialogue on what we want educational outcomes to be must always come first. And I must say that in a situation with an extreme economic crisis, I think that we need vision more than ever. Ladies and gentlemen, in conclusion, I would like to stress the importance of an interactive and reflexive relationship between research and policy, between research and practice. The notion used at this conference, namely evidence-informed educational policy, as opposed to the term evidence-based policy, fits with the notion we uphold at the Flemish Department of Education and Training, and is in line with current developments in Europe and beyond. I really hope that this conference will inspire practitioners, policymakers, and researchers, and will provide ample opportunity to learn and gather around this important topic. I wish you all a very successful conference, and I thank you for your attention.